APAMADA's programmes and facilities are supported through your generosity. Your support really does make a huge difference. You'll find a link for contributions on the website at apamada.org/contribute. Thank you so much.
I want to begin this morning first by just making a comment about our lively evening that we had. It was very interesting that we began with the beautiful piece that Peg read, you know, and about connectedness and community in the fabric. And then our announcement that we would be available for questions, you know, in the Shosan way, the formal way. And then Anne raised her hand and said, but before it came, I just ask about a bow. And then that never ended, which is perfect. It really says that whatever fabric of the community in which we're held, if you pull on one little thread, you get the whole fabric. And it was a beautiful expression of interdependence. Mm-hmm. And the kind of way we were joking about, oh, this never ends, does it? It never ends. Not like it's one damn thing after another. That's not it. It's not, I mean, there is that. But it's mainly that it's all interwoven. That wherever you go, you're going to continue to meet the fabric that holds us. And our community is an expression of the container for Zazen. And Zazen is an expression of our community. And once you begin to see that the forms, all the forms, everything that we do, is a way to hold together the fabric which supports Zazen as its center. And everything is Zazen, ultimately, in its expression. So we're not learning a bunch of forms that from Asia so that we can come and meditate. We're putting Zazen at the center, and all the forms support Zazen. This hall, the way we come in, the way we relate to each other. And everything is a response to everything else. Each bell, each action, each neighbor. And so we continue to enact mutual causality, interdependence all the time. And because we make mistakes and we try our best and internets fail and all that, you know, we understand impermanence too. And some mornings, some people are here and sometimes they're not, or evenings because something happens, and we do our best. So it was a great expression of the whole, you know, in what we're doing. And it was also, there was a lively, playful quality to it also, that we could enjoy each other and learning these things. I want to return to our text, to the Fukan Zazengi. And sometimes you've seen that we'll go back and overlap because we're weaving. But I personally want to go back to a place where I get stuck. And it's a little tough one for me. And so what I want to share with you is one of the ways I'm trying to work out, going deeper for myself, overlapping with what Peg has taught and Sandra so beautifully offered yesterday. And touch on some things that have been perplexing. But also something I can't quite get past. You know, there's a phrase in the text where it says, this is the essential art of Zazen. Oh, this is the essential. That's the kind of one that stops you, right? Mm. But it doesn't say this is the essential technique, does it? It says the essential art. Can you teach art? We, you know, we talked about that. I don't know. It's an art. So I wanted to go back to that piece and what precedes it, because it's that whole thing about not thinking, non-thinking. And that's the place I get caught. Anybody else? That's an interesting one, isn't it? And not because we have to intellectually understand it so much. We have to stay with it to see what it's inviting us. So as we read, it says, settle into a steady, immobile sitting position. That's not the hard part, is it? Think not thinking. How do you think? Not thinking? Non-thinking. This in itself is the essential art of Zazen. So there's our phrase. And then he says, the Zazen I speak of is not learning meditation. It's simply the Dharma gate. It's an opening of repose and bliss, the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. It's the manifestation of ultimate reality. It's the manifestation of ultimate reality. When you sit on your cushion, confused, upset, relaxed, complaining, or, you know, sleepy, that's the manifestation of ultimate reality. So this probably requires a little more digging in. And Dogen wrote, Think of Not Thinking. You know, he lived from 1200 to 1253. And then Keizan Jokin, who lived from 1268 to 1325, he's considered the second great founder of Soto Zen. Dogen is thought of as the founder, and Keizan like the highest ancestor in Japan.
Father and the mother.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, you'll see on many things that have to do with Soto Zen, two symbols. Sometimes you'll see them on the Rakusu, Eheiji and Sojiji. Eheiji was Dogen's temple, Sojiji is Keizan's temple. Mm-hmm. And so they have two Vaticans, basically. Mm-hmm. And they alternate which one is the every year. This one is the one, and this is the one. So when I went to Japan with Blanche, and she was in the old way verifying her Dharma transmission in Japan, we went to both temples, and she did what's called a Zuise ceremony, which was where the person whose Dharma transmission is being verified is the abbot for a day in each of the temples. And so now you have been an abbot at Heiji, and so Jiji, for one, it's ceremonial. It's really beautiful, but there's these two teachers. So Keizan also wrote something called the Ojinki, Zazen Ojinki, which is his version of the Fukan Sasengi. And this is what he wrote. So now he's the generation after. And so listen to, because he would have studied Dogen. Here's what he wrote. Drop mind, intellect, and consciousness, leave thoughts, ideas, and views alone. Leave them alone. Have no designs on becoming a Buddha. Don't judge true or false. You've heard this, right? If you want to cease your confusion, you must cease involvement in thoughts of good or bad. Stop getting caught in unnecessary affairs. A mind unoccupied, together with a body free of activity, is the essential point to remember. So that's his version. So Dogen talks about non-thinking. That's the essential art of Zazen. And Keizan's, I love this, a mind unoccupied, and a body free of activity. So this is still curious, you know. And by the way, the what you see in Japanese that's non-thinking, in Japanese is hishiryo. The shiryo is thinking. And the he, the prefix, is a prefix that's put in front of words that negates it. So it's not that, not the matter of thinking. And this comes from a story. And Peg referred to this. Yaku-san, who was one of our ancestors, had finished Zazen, and a monk asked him, it kind of like Elizabeth asked Choko, mm-hmm. the same question, but he said, what are you thinking of in the immovable mountain-like state of Zazen? And sometimes this is translated as the still state of Zazen. And actually, if you translate it in English, it would be called the still state. Because in Japanese, they do this. They repeat it's part of the language. They repeat syllables to make sure it's like it deepens the meaning. And so Yaka-san replied, "I think of not thinking." And the monk asked, for all of us, "How can one think of not thinking?" And Yaka-san said, "By non-thinking." So this is a story, one of the koans. And that negation, he in Hishiryu, translated as non or not thinking, it also includes, if you go further, into things like beyond or transcendent or emancipated. And Kaz Ta-Nehisi, who many of us know his calligraphy and is a great teacher, he translated non-thinking both as beyond thinking and before thinking. You had mentioned this. It's like beyond thoughts and before thoughts. And Peggy had mentioned this earlier on Tuesday. So non-thinking is considered emancipated thinking, which transcends and is free of both thinking and stopping thought. So it's not thinking, but it's also not stopping thought. This is still difficult for me. How's it going for you? But I'm circling the wagon. Okay. So I appreciate there's, I'm going to give you some other ways of thinking about it. This is from Isshio Fujita. Isshio was a Dharma brother to Shohaku Okumura, who many of us know from the translation. When I went to the first Buddhism in America conference in Boston in 1998, I went to his breakout session because I wanted to meet him. And he was that's a long time ago, he's a young guy. So was I. And he said, when we refer to the qualities of Hishiryo, that beyond thinking, when we refer to those qualities, we mean that sitting posture is itself beyond thinking and has no thought. See, you're sitting and the posture isn't doing the thinking. In some ways, Sandra's edging up on this yesterday, you know. Things are happening in your brain, but your body, the posture isn't the thinking. And he said, not that we ourselves are free from thought. We will never be beyond thinking as long as we live. What we can do is sit with the faith that Zazen posture itself is Buddha, that Zazen posture itself is beyond thinking. Now that's starting to get closer to something I can. It's like, oh, okay, I'm not going to worry so much. I'm going to offer myself fully to the posture. Like last night when we had all that activity and fun and very lots of thinking, and then we sat. I don't know about you, but I was like, boom. It was so deep and so quiet and so still after that. It's like a some sort of contrast. He said, we tend to think that we are sitting Zazen. This is not the case. The entire universe is sitting Zazen. I remember Blanche talking about when she went to Dokusan once with Suzuki Roshi, and she was so excited because she counted her breath the whole time and hadn't lost count. And she was wanted to tell him. And so she told him. And she said it was the only time he acted really pissed off at her. He's kind of screamed a little bit. Never think that you do Zazen. Zazen does Zazen. So she was talking about accomplishment, gaining idea. So Shohaku, Isshio's Dharma buddy, he wrote a small book a long time ago before he began publishing just on Soto Zen. And he compared non-thinking to a car engine that's idling in neutral. So we're getting more gritty here. Even though the engine is fired up and working, the gears aren't engaged, so the car doesn't move. He said, when we think not non-thinking, and this is his quote, we cannot say that there is no thinking. And we cannot say that we are thinking. Thoughts are simply idling. I can kind of go with that. In Zazen, the mind is alive, not deadened, and able to function. But we try not to actively, intentionally produce, like get in and put it in gear and trains the thought. Thoughts arise. But if the mind is bright and alert, he says, and this is what's important, it's alive, it's able to function, it's bright, it's alert, it is not dull. In fact, in some of the things we read, dullness and structure are struck aside. It's much easier to let them flow through without grabbing onto them and developing them in this aliveness. So the thoughts can flow like a quiet stream, he says, without sticking to anything. He says, by keeping an upright posture, without either rejecting or chasing after anything, we aren't controlled by delusive thoughts. He says, basically, you have delusive thoughts. You're just not controlled by them. It's not about getting rid of them. We're not controlled by them. So in our Zen practice, it emphasizes knowing things directly without interference from our thinking. Katagiri, I was looking at all the people I could find that would say something to me about this because it's so difficult for me. He's talking about getting something directly. He said in Zen, properly put your body and mind in the appropriate place. Then you're supported and you're allowed to be realized. It's another phrase that I thought was really interesting. You're allowed to be realized. You're setting yourself up as a target that can be hit. You're not shooting the arrow. You're the target that's going to be met. Instead of shutting yourself up in a small house, he says, called discriminative thinking, that's the small house. Throw open your heart. Instead of shutting yourself in the small house, throw open your heart. Now we're getting closer to things that you remember in the, well, you don't remember probably, but I'll remind you in the noon thing that I sent from Pat Thielen. She said, moment after moment, we're willing to surrender. Just step forward without looking to the left or right, without looking to the future or referring to the past. Be willing to let go of distractions, let go of insights. Let go of insights. Because they're tricky. You think you got something and now you're off. You're in gear again. Be willing to let the tracking mind stop and return to your being just as it is. Our practice is to return to this complete, undivided moment. I love this, not looking to the future or referring to the past either. It's different than saying be in the moment. Be willing to let go, just return to the undivided. So I just wanted to give you these things that I'd found to try to help myself. I hope it's useful. So it's not quite so difficult. In the Fukan Sasengi, right after that, Dogen says it must be deportment beyond hearing and seeing. It's not a principle. Is it not a principle that's prior to knowledge and perceptions? It's another way of saying it's outside of the way we normally put things together. And that other translation I was using, they say practice and realization are the deportment of this very body mind, Sandra. Beyond sight and sound, beyond thinking and analyzing. It's the way we move in this body in the world. And that's why we said last night, as we engage the forms and practice them, we are shaped by them and then move in the world in a different way. So I'm going to give you an everyday poetic expression of this to once again keep it. And I'm in a moment, I'm going to share the poem on the screen just because I think it's good to see it. The way that this one is done. It's a new poem that has just come out in the very newest edition of New and Collected Poems by Marie Howe that was released like this week. And bless her heart, Judy Myers is actually a friend of Marie and knows her. And I was walking back to my Airbnb yesterday and I hear this voice and I look over in traffic and it's Judy waving at me. I got your book. Stop on the corner. And so she goes around the block and gives me this book. And so there are many poems that I know in there, but some new ones. And this one, I was just really taken by because there are references to exactly what we're studying here. One thing to know is that Marie adopted an infant from East Asia. I think she's Chinese, but I'm not quite sure. But she's now, I think, 13 or 14. So she's like 13, 14. Girl, single parent. So anyway. Another theory of time. So I tell my daughter, before we go, I'm going to stop for a second. I think this is, you remember the first night when we were reading the Fukan Sasanke to you together? The way I think about it is we weren't performing, but we also weren't just reading words. We just read the words, it's like dull. And we weren't trying to act, but we were enacting what we're reading. And that's important. The writer has something they're trying to express. You don't know exactly what that is, but when you take their words, they're going to come through you. And you do enact them. And it's maybe different than someone else would enact them. But it's really important to honor the writer enough to get into it. And so when I read, I think about this, and I'm not trying to be dramatic. I'm trying to enact it. And then it's going to come through like Flint, and it'll come through differently like you. But so here we go. So I tell my daughter, we're eating dinner, reading through the book of stories. I'm worried about Jason. If I seem distracted, that's what's on my mind. And she says, take it out of your mind. Then dips and eats a dumpling and says, but don't take out Jason. And this morning at the deli, I say, I'm grumpy because it's the first day of school and I'm thinking of so many things. And she says, take them out. And I say, how do I do that? And she says, think about now. I bite into my egg and cheese on a sesame bagel, and it is good. It is. Although it does bother me how she always wants to sit at the tiny deli counter so near the garbage bins, eating meatballs for breakfast. And then she says, there's a typo there. And then she says, I can't remember the future or the past. The local high school girls order iced coffee and whole wheat bagels with nothing on them. My girl eats her meatballs. And I stare past the cutouts of ham and turkey taped to the window. And I think about the moment I want so much to leave. How small it is sometimes, this now, how constricting me with my bad teeth and aging elbows. As person after person tosses their trash inches behind my back before walking out the open door. Do you hear it? I'll go again. To break it up a little bit. And Marie teaches at Sarah Lawrence. And so it's the beginning of the semester. So I tell my daughter, we're eating dinner, reading through the book of stories. I'm worried about Jason, someone that they know, of course. And she says, if I seem distracted, that's what's on my mind. And she says, take it out of your mind. Then deep. Dips and eats a dumpling and says, but don't take out Jason. And that's a whole Dharma talk. In the Fukan Sasangi, For you must know that just there in Zazen, the right Dharma is manifesting itself, and that from the first, dullness and distraction are struck aside. She says to her daughter, I'm distracted. I don't want to be broken in our connection, but I know that I am. And then out of the blue, this Buddha shows up and says, take it out of your mind, but don't take out Jason. Keep the love, have your heart blown open. Just don't worry about what's going on in your mind. And then Marie says, and this morning at the deli, I say I'm grumpy because it's the first day of school and I'm thinking of so many things. And she says again, take them out. And this is just like Yaku-san and his student. Not thinking, how do you think? She says, take them out. And I say, how do I do that? And she says, think about now. So it's a little different, but she's saying, think of not thinking. How do you think of not thinking? Non-thinking. Be here. And so then Marie writes, I bite into my egg and cheese on a sesame bagel. It's like just the enactment of now. And it is good. And she repeats it. It is. Well, although it does bother me. And so here comes the thinking. Although it does bother me how she always wants to sit at the tiny deli counter so near the garbage bins eating meatballs for breakfast. So she laps back into, and then she says, the daughter says, out of the blue, I can't remember the future or the past. Wait a minute, Pat Phelan just said, without looking to the left or right, without looking for the future or referring to the past, be willing to let go of distraction. Like, where's this coming from? I can't remember the future or the past. Then the local high school girls, you can see them, right? Order iced coffee and a whole wheat bagel with nothing on them. You know? My girl eats her meatballs. And I stare past the cutouts of ham and turkey, taped to the window, and think about the moment I want so much to leave. How small it is sometimes, this now, and she's capitalized it. How constricting. Me with my bad teeth and aging elbows, and she lapses into the selfness around it. And then that interesting, as person after person tosses their trash inches behind my back, everything's going on so close all the time. Tosses trash inches behind my back before walking out the open door. Body and mind drop away. Practice realization is naturally undefiled. Going forward in practice is a matter of everydayness. Out the deli door. Constantly perform in such a manner, and you will be assured of being a person such as they. Your treasure store will open of itself, and you'll be able to use it at will. This is the way it came through me. How is it coming through you?
Well, it touches me very deeply. I feel like it's such a gift from Marie. You know, she is not presenting herself handsomely. And, you know, she's in the presence of the Buddha. And she keeps avoiding it. She keeps letting this moment, this precious moment, and, you know, with her daughter, who won't always be with her. And I assume Marie Howe must be rather old.
She's closer to our age, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, having my children left, and, you know, those moments are just so precious, and they are finite. And there she is, and she isn't.
And the girl's just being herself.
I know.
It's not, Buddhas are truly Buddhas. They do not necessarily notice that they are Buddhas.
And the world is just being itself.
That's right. And the door is open. The door is open.
But she has the gift to perceive it and record it.
And that's because of practice. Ah. this seemingly kind of, I don't know, wondrous qualities. This is Katagiri's, let your heart come open. A zazen can't be, it can't be an accomplishment of your body and mind. But there's, these things are signs of the ineffable power of zazen, which is beyond our ability to explain it, but we can enact it, we can live it, we can see it, we can recognize it, we can record it. And it doesn't matter if you're smart or not, because you can see it's not based on intellect. Single-minded exertion, bringing ourselves to it, is pursuit of the way. It's an everyday affair. So I think that's enough. There's more we could speak about, but I think we're at a time.
Stephanie raised her hand.
Oh, yes.
I was just so struck, just like Jim, by that sentence. I think about the moment I so much want to leave. And as Joan said, for me, that's been the hardest part of my practice over the years, is that awareness. That coming to that awareness, just like Maria says, I know this is important. This is where I want to be. This now. And yet,
if the slightest,
that is what I found so difficult and challenging about practice over the years, is that awareness of how I want to leave the moment.
And that's wisdom and compassion expressing itself. You have the wisdom, like Pei was just saying, to see it, and you have the compassion to be kind to yourself and knowing it, and then coming back, and then coming back, and then coming back. Like in the poem, she comes back and she's, Buddha tells her something, and then she loses it, and then she comes back.
That's why intensives, I think, are so helpful, because they enable me, they support me wanting to come back.
Me too. I fly thousands of miles. So I can be with you. So you can ask me to do this, which is my practice. Because if we don't do this, it's amazing what happens to us by having to do this. That's our practice. You know? So, like I said, I think that's probably enough. This is the time we're supposed to stop, right? Or before this. But...
Yeah.